All right. Good afternoon, everyone. The annual public hearing is called to order November 9th, 2020 at 2:04 p.m. Before we begin, I'll need to take roll call. Chairman Morian is present. Vice Chairman?
Present.
Commissioner Abel?
Present.
Commissioner Bell? Commissioner Galo?
Present.
Commissioner Hildebrand?
Present.
Commissioner Latimer?
Present.
Thank you. I know Commissioner Patton, I heard you earlier.
Yeah, still here.
All right. And I can see Commissioner Scott, so I know he's here. This is our annual public hearing, and before proceeding with any further business, Mr. Smith, I believe you have a statement to make and some comments about how the system works.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. For the record, my name is Carter Smith. A public notice of this meeting containing all items on the proposed agenda has been filed in the Office of the Secretary of State, as required by Chapter 551, Government Code, referred to as the Open Meetings Act. Mr. Chairman, I'd like for this fact to be noted in the official record of the meeting. Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, I just want to join all of you in welcoming the speakers today to the meeting, albeit virtually. We really appreciate those of you who signed up to speak to the commission and taking time out of your Monday to join us. Just a little bit about the rules of the road for the call today. At the appropriate time, you will be allowed in through the conference bridge to address the commission about any matter of your choosing. Just as a reminder, each speaker will have 2 minutes to speak to the commission. And when you start, if you don't mind saying your name and let the commission know who you are, and then please present the matter of interest to you. Again, we look forward to getting your input and feedback, and thank you for joining us today. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you very much, Carter. All right. This is usually one of our more productive and fun things to do, but if this is our first attempt at doing a virtual meeting, so we'll see how it works. And the first speaker is Alyssa Mangro on water safety and drowning prevention.
Hi there. Can you guys hear me okay?
We can hear you.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, perfect.
Good afternoon, Chairman Morian and Commissioners. My name is Alyssa Magrum. I'm the Executive Director for the Texas-based nonprofit organization Collins Hope. Our mission is to provide education, awareness, and resources to prevent drowning. I'm also on the board for the Texas Drowning Prevention Alliance and part of a group working on the National Water Safety Action Plan. I speak to you today in an effort to increase collaboration with Texas Parks and Wildlife so that we can better educate Texans and visitors to Texas state parks about water safety to prevent drowning. I've been in this role for the last decade because I love spending time outdoors and recreating in water, but drowning is fast, silent, and a preventable epidemic. In the last 2 years, at least 164 Texas children have fatally drowned, 49 of those in open water. It's estimated that 5 to 6 times as many children have had a non-fatal drowning incident. That means at least another 300 children survived a non-fatal drowning incident in open water alone. And those are just the child statistics. At Collins Hope, we believe that by educating children, parents, and caregivers, we can prevent these and all drownings. This summer, we saw more Texas families at area lakes, beaches, and open water swimming areas, as many pools were closed because of the pandemic. As Texas families get into open water to swim, recreate, and boat, many are uneducated about the dangers of open water and unaware of simple things they can do to prevent drownings from happening to their families. Together, we can educate them. Collins Hope hopes to work alongside Texas Parks and Wildlife by providing water safety educational resources to be distributed at state parks, which support your goals 2 and 3 in your strategic plan. We would love to involve Texas Parks and Wildlife in developing and implementing a statewide drowning prevention program that dovetails and aligns with the National Water Safety Action Plan, as well as local plans throughout Texas. and we are able to provide training for TPWD personnel who provide outreach to children and families at Texas state parks. Thank you so much for your time. Collins Hope looks forward to any opportunity to work beside Texas Parks and Wildlife to help keep Texas families safer around recreating in, on, near, and around our open waters. Thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you, and thank you for what you do. And I'm sure the department is very interested in help any collaboration that you can work out. So,
but very much, Mr. Chairman, and we'll follow up with her. Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. The next speaker is Dana George on water safety in Texas.
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me? It's actually Dana Gage, just to clarify the record. Can everyone hear me?
We can hear you. I can hear you.
Okay, very good. Well, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Dana Gage, and I am speaking to you today about the importance of creating a more focused effort toward the very real and pervasive problem that is drowning in our great state of Texas. By way of introduction, I'm founder of the LV Project. We're a nonprofit in Fort Worth dedicated to increasing the use of life vests on open water. I'm active in water safety at a national level, serving on the board of the National Safe Boating Council, and recently was appointed to serve on the Life Jacket Work Group for the United States' first national water safety plan. In 2019, I was deeply honored to receive your agency's 2019 Boater Educator of the Year Award. But more than any of those titles, the reason I'm here is that I'm first and foremost Connor's mom. Despite being a lifelong lake kid and an excellent swimmer, my beautiful 15-year-old son drowned on Labor Day weekend at Possum Kingdom Lake in 2012. I have since learned that Connor's story is not at all unusual, but it is 100% preventable. And since open water is the catalyst for so many Texas deaths each year, I'd like to consider three things. Number one, Texas is a top boating state. We rank number two in the nation for annual spending on sales of new boats and related products. In 2019, the number was $1.9 billion. That's up 9% from the previous year. We are second only to Florida. In fact, there are currently 600,000 registered boats in Texas, with millions of people visiting our waterways each year. Number two, perhaps not coincidentally, we're a top drowning state. According to USA Swimming, we're number two in the country for drownings, with more than 1,800 souls lost over the past 10 years, many of those in open water. Third, drowning isn't just a little kid problem. Drowning rates triple at age 15. The majority of those are in open water. In fact, 72% of all drownings are in open water, most of them being teenagers and adults, just like my Connor. Open water is fun, but it's dangerous. And as an agency with recreational oversight, my hope is that we can all together take a very real look at this problem. I believe a very good start would be to create a singular, dedicated department to open water safety in Texas. Thanks so much for letting me speak today.
Well, thank you. And again, thank you for what you do. I'm sure the department would be more than happy to work with you and reach out. All right. The next speaker is David Zane, also on drowning prevention.
Good afternoon, Chairman Morian, Commissioners, and Director Carter. My name is David Zane. I live in Austin, and I am testifying as a private citizen. I'd like to add my voice to those others speaking today to raise awareness on the magnitude of drownings occurring in open waters in our state. By trade, I am an epidemiologist, so I like to look at information and statistics. I've seen your agency data on the number of open water drownings that occur each year in the state, and the large number is concerning. Over the last 5 years, there's been over 300 open water drownings. Sadly, that's an average of at least 60 per year in our state. This is probably not the full extent of the drowning problem, since it does not include those that survive a drowning. Sometimes it's important to have a perspective on things like this, so I want to compare for you the yearly number of these open water drownings to the yearly number of hunting fatalities in Texas. Tragically, it seems that there are two or three hunting fatalities per year in the state. Contrast that with at least 60 drowning fatalities per year. Or to put it another way, for for every hunting fatality, there are at least 20 to 30 drowning fatalities each year. Despite these sobering data, we all know that drownings are preventable. So with that in mind, I'd like to encourage the agency to do two things. First, to strengthen the prevention strategies outlined in your agency's strategic plan, specifically as it relates to data collection and analysis. And two, work with community drowning prevention organizations across Texas to develop and strengthen a statewide drowning prevention effort related to open waters. In closing, I want to thank you for the opportunity to raise the importance of preventing drownings in open waters, an issue that is a concern in Texas. Thank you.
Thank you. And it's all three of you addressed an issue that I hadn't really focused on, but certainly Parks and Wildlife can be involved. All right. Next speaker is Ashford Rosenberg, speaking on the Gulf of Mexico CARES Act spin plan, I guess.
Good afternoon. Can y'all hear me?
Yes. Thank you.
Hi. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Ashford Rosenberg, and I am the policy analyst for the Gulf of Mexico Reef Fish Shareholders Alliance. We are the largest organization of grouper and snapper fishermen in the Gulf of Mexico. We have members in all five Gulf states, including a strong membership base in Texas. We are incorporated in Texas and have been based in Galveston since 2007. My comments today are focused on Texas's SIN plan for the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act. The COVID-19 pandemic has wreaked havoc on commercial fishermen across the Gulf of Mexico. Most seafood product caught by Texas commercial fishermen goes to restaurants on the coast and throughout the country. With the closure of restaurants earlier this year, fishing was essentially shut down and the traditional supply chain for Texas products severely disrupted. And in May, President Trump signed the CARES Act into law, which included $300 million in disaster relief for commercial fishermen nationwide. While the $9.2 million allocated to the state of Texas through the CARES Act is not enough to make the industry whole, it could provide a critical stopgap for fishermen and seafood businesses still recovering from the first shutdown and with potentially more restaurant closures coming down the pipe. Today, I'm seeking information on the status of the SIN plans for the state of Texas. Other states are accepting applications, and Texas commercial fishermen are curious on when they can expect to be able to apply for assistance. If possible, I would appreciate it if the commission could provide any light on the following questions. What's the status of the SIN plan, and when will it be submitted to NOAA for approval? What criteria will be used to determine the 35% revenue loss for commercial fishermen and fishing businesses? What will the application process be, and will there be an opportunity for industry input into the plan? Thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you for taking your time out. Reach out to us. I don't really know.
Mr. Chairman, maybe I can comment on that. And so
sure.
That is something that we are working on with the governor's office, and Robin Reichers is our lead on that. And why don't we just have him follow up with Ms. Rosenberg directly to be able to answer those questions that she raised. And I'm sure Robin is listening, but if not, we'll follow up right after the meeting.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep. Great. Thank you. The next speaker is Mr. Ken Hale, but I understand he's not on. Then we have John Gully, who is also not, he's there. Okay. Mr. Gully, would he get Matagorda Bay? Okay.
Yes, sir. My name is John Gully. It's a pleasure to be on with y'all, and thank you for Parks and Wildlife for everything that y'all do for the state of Texas. And I just wanted to say, I fish East Matagorda Bay, probably in the area for the last 20 to 25 years. And when I started fishing the bay, it was just awesome, awesome bay to catch trout and reds. It was very easy to catch trout. And I'm concerned, and many other friends of mine are concerned, that the trout fishing has gone down significantly over the past 5 years. And I have some reasons I wanted to bring out to y'all to point out why I think that's happening. And one, you know, it's population growth. That's just nature of the business. and technology increase. You know, there's nothing you can do about that. But I think the Matagorda area has just oversaturated with the amount of guides that are over the area. And I don't mean to sound like I'm a guide basher, because they provide a very good service for kids and people that don't have boats and stuff like that. But I've heard of multiple guides that will take more than 1, 2, 3 trips per day. And that is really, really hitting me down to the core. That's just very frustrating. You know, why should they take, abuse the bay and take more than one trip a day? They should only be limited to one trip a day. Say the average fisherman fishes 1 or 2 times a month. Say they take 20 to 40 trout per month. A guide will go out and fish. Say they will take 6 trips a week. I guess if they have a good week, that's 120 trout a week. Okay, and then you do that, say 50 guides do that. That's 6,000 trout per week. Over a 10-month period, say 2 months, they don't get to fish much. That's 60,000 trout over a whole entire year. So that's, to me, that's an exorbitant amount of fish taken. Unfortunately, you know, there's no way you can take guide licenses away, but I wish there was a way that you could limit the number of licenses that are issued for a particular bay, or make it more difficult to get a license. And another thing that I wish that could be implemented is for guides to have to fill out a log. And it would be a very simple log. I don't mean to get Parks and Wildlife more work to do, but it would be what bay system we fish on a particular bay, how many fish were harvested, and how many clients we took out for this particular day. And that would be submitted maybe per month, per year, and that would give an idea of how many fish are harvested for a particular bay system for the entire year. So I have some suggestions that could be implemented. Number one of my friends suggested up the 15 inches to 18 inches, go 18 to 25 inches. One thing that I was throwing around was maybe November to May, drop the 25 to 20, make it 15 to 20 inches for November to May. And I don't know if it would work, but maybe you make it 3 trout per person or 10 trout per boat. And then make the guys do the logbook, only one guide trip per day. Limit the number of guide licenses issued and per bay system if possible. And number 6, no more running of shorelines by tower boats. I think that has taken away some of our grass in the shorelines. I looked at other states and what they do. You know, Louisiana is just, that's too much, 25 trout. Florida, they have so many different complicated rules and regulations. I think Texas does an awesome job. I like the 5 trout limits. I like how guys are not allowed to submit their catch. But say there's 4 people on a boat, 3 clients and 1 guide. They're going to take 3 limits. And I've heard of many occasions where the guide will contribute to the catch and a good majority of the catch. And I know there's nothing that anybody can do about that. That's just kind of the nature of the business. But I just wanted to bring that up, and if y'all could take my suggestions into consideration, I really appreciate it. And I'm an avid fisherman, very passionate, and I want my kid to enjoy the fisheries as much as I have, and then his kids, and to continue to enjoy fishing. It's an awesome thing to do, and get the kids out there and fish. Well, I thank y'all very much for my time.
We want to do the same thing, I can assure you. And you've given us a lot to think about, and I'm sure they'll make note and think about what we can do. Mr. Ken Hale, I understand you are now on the line. You're on, speaking about exotic fish regulation fee changes. So please go ahead.
Yes, sir. I'm here. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, you're breaking up just a little bit. What would you repeat that, please?
No, I just said go ahead. You're on.
Oh, I'm in the middle of stage, huh? Okay.
Yes.
Well, as I'm sure all of your other participants have said, I appreciate the opportunity to submit what my thoughts and feelings are. Of course, the area of my concern has to do with your exotic species division, particularly where we are involved, of course, is with the sale of the sterile grass carp and the sale of the tilapia. And I noticed the recommendation was that essentially, even though we're not talking about a great deal of money, you are going to be doubling the fees and cutting the workload at the same time. And I found that very interesting. I know you do have expenses, and the governor has, of course, forced everyone, every department, to submit major cutbacks. But I really have a little issue with some of that. And really and truly, the overall issue, not with the sterile grass carp, because I feel like that's you really got that worked out pretty well, where you can keep track of what's coming in and keep up with that. But the tilapia, being of the capo fact that they just really have very little capability to overwinter unless they're in a power plant lake, really have not proved themselves to be any kind of problem. And I think we are missing out on a great deal of commerce by keeping these kind of restrictions on these fish where they could not be used for other purposes. My area that I'm selling to, of course, is for individual pond and lake stocking, for vegetation control, and, of course, for forage for the bass and the catfish, which they do a tremendous job since they are so prolific. Now, I realize, you know, you'd have to draw a line somewhere down in southern Texas where they just do not have the winters that we do up here in the northeastern part of the state. But I think Mother Nature pretty well takes care of this without having to get into so much regulatory control.
All right. Well, we'll take your comments into account. And I appreciate you taking the time to voice them. Let me just call their name just for the record. Mr. Eric Brazier was going to speak on commercial fishing. Okay. And Mr. Donnie Lynch, he was going to talk about the gate closure at Caddo Wildlife Management Area. Is there anybody else on the line that has not had a chance to speak? All right. In that case, the commission has completed its business, and I declare us adjourned at 2:28 p.m.